fascists of the Iron Guard. And we start to torment him and insult him. And then one of them says to him, why didn't he go to Palestine? Why didn't he be insect, vampire? Why didn't he go to bloodsucker? Why didn't he leave Romania? This is not your country. And he says, well, you know, he doesn't say, well, you know, he says, but God loves Jews. And then this fascist replies, God loves everything anti-Yid. Now, for Izum, that moment was an illumination. At that moment, he understood that if Christians hated him, he had to hate Christians. It was the only response. So we've got this almost dialectical response. It's the power of negating a statement. So Izum is thinking, if God loves everything anti-Yid, the Yid will love everything anti-God. Does that make sense? It's a complete reversal. It's like everything you think is good, I think is bad. Everything I think is bad, you think is good. Does that make sense? But it doesn't, because it's almost like a kind of mystical illumination for you, that this is how I'm going to think in the future. And the title of this book is called Legacy of the Northern Messi, the Making of a Name and a Messiah, because it's this moment. Izum realizes something mad, absurd, impossible, but which he really believed. He truly believed, this is the mystical illumination, that he was the Messiah, the Jewish Messiah, who had been sent to earth to lead the revolution, to lead an avant-garde revolution, to lead a letterist revolution, which would find a new way of being human. And this new way of being human had to happen because with fascism, anti-Semitism, massacres, killings, atrocities, the world had come to an end. The Christian world was finished. The world of the Enlightenment was finished. The world of Western reason was finished. To replace it, there had to be a new form of humanity. And that new form of humanity, Izum was going to tell you, going to lead the way. The new form of humanity had to be Jewish. Il faut visiter le monde. The world must become Jewish. So if you see dealing with a man who thinks in absolutes all the time, good, bad, good, evil, evil, good, reverse, good, evil, evil, good, reverse. Does that make sense? And you can see the link here with surrealism, for example. You can see that dialectical way of thinking that goes back to Hegel, or even goes back to alchemy, in fact. Because alchemy is all about the art of transformation. It's all about turning one thing into another. The surrealists married Hegelianism, Marxism, but the surrealists, as I'm sure you know, loved alchemy as well. They would put the two together, and that in poetry, in words, the world could be transformed. The transforming the world, the revolution, began with words. Let's stop there for a minute. Is this too bad or making sense? You don't have to, if you've got no Andrew, this is just insane. You know, why are you here? It's mad. But I think it is mad, because I think it is mad. And it does go mad, but it's still, you know, there's still a kind of truth in his madness. Okay, here's some Romanian for you. It's easy. Nu e bada, e bada. What? Nu e bada, nu e dada, e bada. Nu e dada, e bada. I love that. There's a review of the book Speaking East in the London Review of Books. And the headline, they copied the headline from my book. C'est nous y est dada, y est bada. For the first time, I looked at the books, it's got something like, you know, it was a lovely sight to see that in the books. Please do that. What does it mean? It was a formula formulated by his own in 1944 when he was beginning his journey towards revolutionary thinking. And it's easy to translate. It looks like this. It isn't Dada. This is not Dada, what he's doing. Ye Bada. Bada is difficult to translate. But in Romanian, the word for yes in Romanian is Da. And the word Bada, I don't know what you say in German, but in French, if you want to contradict someone, you know, if you say to me, well, I think he's an intermediate, and I go, pop on the wall. Mais non. That's very French, isn't it? Mais non, monsieur. And they're very far better than English. Mais non, monsieur. I live in Paris, but that's the typical, you know, it's in default mode. But that means, mais non. So we translate this as, it isn't Dada. It's something else. Does that make sense? And that's the beginning of lecturism, and that's the beginning of moving from surrealism to lecturism, which will take us to situationism, and ultimately revolution. Again, this picture of Lisieux, it is from the other streets, looking like the young Elvis, very cool. Lecturism, situationism, revolution. This is the period 1945-1968. I said I was going to divide it up into two initial sections. And this is the period that takes us to May 68. And of course, May 68, many cultural historians, especially French, and I think they're right, have now decided that the key philosophy or key ideology, not really, ideology behind May 68 belonged to the situationists. And I've put here some graffiti from 1953 when Guy Debord was actually still a lettriste. And it says, ne travaillez jamais. Come on, speak French here. What does that mean?
You never work.
Never work. Never work. And that's been my philosophy my whole life. I'm actually not joking. I don't believe in work. Never work. Never work. It's funny, but it's true. Where it comes from? It comes from a poem by Rimbaud. And Rimbaud, the poet Rimbaud, obviously. And Rimbaud is looking out his window. He's young, he's a teenager, basically. And he sees people working in the fields, you know. And he says, jamais. Jamais, je ne travaille. I'm never going to work. I had that feeling when I was 17. What's the point? It's stupid. I don't believe in it. I don't want to be a slave to capitalist stupidity. No. Like, 17, I'm 59, never changed. I don't believe in work. But it's a serious slogan as well, ne travaille jamais, because when Guy Debord says ne travaille jamais, never work, it doesn't just mean sit around all day watching television, smoking skunk weed, doing nothing, being a consumer of the society of the spectacle. But what he means is live. Live, don't work. And this is a very important idea that Guy Debord took from the Dutch sociologist. If our Dutch friends are listening to me, they will correct my pronunciation, of somebody called Johan Hansinger. Now, Hansinger wrote a very important book for the situation. It's called Hollow Lunettes, Man at Play. Do you know this book? You do, yeah, so you do. Well, let me remind you of the big idea in the book. The big idea is there are two forms of human being. Homo fada, the man who makes, or the man and woman who makes, works, does things, or homo ludens, the man who plays. Which is more important? I don't know what Hansinger says. He said, Hollow Weekends is more important than Hollow Feather because all human society that we call civilization is based on play and not work. Society based on work is a slave society. It's not a civilized society. A society based on play is what we should aspire to. Creativity, poetry, sex, love, improvisation, all the things that happened in the 1960s began with this notion of play being more important than work. Does this seem mad? I think so. Does it? So, Nicolas Jamet, this becomes the slogan of 1968 for many students in Paris. And if you go to Paris now, this Nicolas Jamet, this graffiti, the Vivo, there are many young people in Paris, particularly at the moment with a lot of political agitation in France at the moment, who use situationist ideas and slogans. And if you go around France, not just Paris, but Paris, Marseille, and different places, you'll see a lot of anarchist situationist slogans and graffiti. One of them is this, the Tanya Jamie. I was going to the Italian shop near my house, and I went down to get some pasta the other day, and I saw this graffiti. He said, on the clever badly bully, we are not going to die of work. These ideas are still here. They're still in people's heads. And this particular graffiti, it's all been disturbed, and human situations, even now, every time the police wipe it out, if they do, even now, they go back and do it in exactly the same writing as this, as a kind of homage to the board. And the idea behind it is, this is the Rue de Seine, which is the frontier between the right bank and the left bank. The right bank is known for commerce, politics. The left bank is supposed to be for play. It's a playground for love, sex, and adventure. Or at least that's the idea. It's not anymore, but at least what's been. Right, poetry. This is Lettres poetry. And I thought I would give you some Lettres poetry before I explain the theory behind it. Because I think the practice is more important than the theory in some ways. This is a photograph of two young leftists outside of Barco and the Mabillon, which is still there. It's actually a very posh gay bar now, but those days it was more of a what they call a toque, it's more of a dive. They're not like cooks, so they're a bit thin as well. Certainly drunk in the middle of the day in the middle of Paris. But I mean, I think it's a fantastic photograph, it's a good photograph. I think it tells you something about youth culture at the time. Two young lettres, the streets of Paris. Paris, vous Paris, étranger. That's the title of the poem, which in English, obviously, is Paris Seen by a Stranger. This is one of the first poems which Izu wrote when he came to Paris. And he describes his response to the city in a very unique way. Now, before I read it, because I can read it in the same voice as Izu, because Izu explained to me how to read it, I'd like you just to read it to yourselves and imagine that you have no language. Imagine that you have no language. What do you hear when you read this in your head? So I'll just give you 30 seconds to do that, okay? Starting now. Read it in your head. Don't listen to me. Read the poem in your head. Read the poem in your head. Don't listen to me. Something will happen when you read the poem in your head. Okay, so, right. We don't speak any language. I don't speak any German, so, you know, that's my problem. That's something which I should have been, you know, about years ago, but I don't speak any German. So when I'm in Germany, which is quite often, I don't understand what's going on in certain places at certain times. I have no language. So, Izu He's a young migrant, he's escaped from Romania, he arrives in Paris, he's got no language. I'm going to read this out and ask you what you think it means. Naive and pagan country. Pigalle, les catanes, Escorial, Champs-Élysées, les putains, les baranes, Saint-Germain, Bourniche, Tricariche, Sandwich, Ushkish. Hello, baby. Over the train, Yankee Dog Kuro, your fucking noodle. All right, lady. Is this just complete noise? Or is something happening at this point? I think something's happening. So I'd like to know what you think it is, because I know.
Kind of repetition of what you hear in the streets, or like the collage of sounds and English, French, like words you hear very often and make maybe no sense if you don't understand, but you.
I think it's brilliant. You're absolutely right. I think it's a brilliant poem because poetry, the poet writes a poem, and it's kind of vertical. The author writes object. In this, it's not vertical, it's horizontal. He's looking around him. Self. He's in Paris. He doesn't understand what he's hearing, but he hears noises. And the noises mean something. But he doesn't know what they mean. And I think, you know, when you're in the middle of something, you don't understand what's going on. When you're in a horizontal position, you don't understand what's going on. You can feel it, you can sense it, you can hear it, you don't understand it. And this is, if you want to, an owl, a sound description of what it felt to be young in Paris, a migrant on the street in 1945, I think this is it. Now, the only French words in it, les catanes, which means horse, and he tells us this as well, les putains, French horse. The rest of the French sounding words are nonsense, just invented noise. Tricariche, sandwich, sandwich, obviously, bouche-quiche, but what he's hearing, hello, baby, over the lady. Paris is full of American GIs trying to pick up prostitutes. And the prostitutes would use a hello, baby. Like that's American GIs. Yankee doodle doodle. I don't know, Yankee something. Noodle, fucky noodle. Yeah. Fucky, you want fucky, you fucky, fuck, fuck, etc. All right, lady. Is it making sense now? So just for our amusement, I'll read it again. Pigalle, which is the red light district of Paris. That's a clue. Les catales, scoriales, chanzalites, les balades, saint-germain, boulish, tirish, servish, tishish. Hello, baby. Pobre, trevi. Yankee, good, good. You're the fuck you do. It's like kind of early version of rap, in some ways. But the thing, because it's built on noise, sound, and effect, and rhythm. Noise, sound, effect, and rhythm have replaced meaning. Number one, that is what letterism does. It replaces meaning with sound. It's a new form of poetry. That's a lot already, isn't it? It's a new form of poetry. I think it is. Now, one of Lesieux's ambitions was to flood Paris with letterist poetry. He's very charismatic. He's very good looking. And he gathered young people around him as a kind of gang, as a gang of hooligans, many of them Jewish, many of them refugees, many of them in the city, you know, with no money, making a living as rent boys or, you know, prostitutes or just living off the streets. And, so he wanted to form a gang of hooligans who would read poetry aloud in the streets. The tambourines, and these he called the Letterist Symphonies. the Lettrist symphonies. And the idea was to provoke a reaction with ordinary people in the street. Now, a poem like this, yeah, okay, maybe it's young men and women are banging tambourines and they're reading this out. It's good, it's exciting, it's funny, etc. But what about this? This is dramatic, yeah? This is another poem written in the same way, in the same period. Cripo sangue con de juifa, sanguillard de juif, égorgé, 1945. Cries for 5 million Jews with their throats cut in 1945. Now, this is a poem that young Lettrists would read out in the street deliberately to provoke an extreme reaction. Let's listen to the poem before we decide what that reaction would be. By day, red grenade, got yaf, mej baf, strap. By day, I, the egoge. Gehang, Himmler, Gimler, behind, Auschwitz, Schwitz, Schwitz, Belsen, Berger. This isn't so funny, is it? What's going on, do you think? Well, let's have a look at the... It's not really German, is it? But Gott jaf, Mensch, Bach, Strap. What does that mean? Anything? Or is it just noise? I think it's what Izu hears as a Jew. In the German language, he doesn't understand it, but he can transcribe it in this way. But if they read their name, Yiddish, from the Torah, as well, the open lines of the Torah, Gehang, Mehang, nonsense, nonsense, just noise. Words that make sense here are qui égorgé, which in French means a cry of someone with their throat cut. So this poem is supposed to be the noise that someone would make if you cut their throat. And that's what comes out as by me, God, yeah, me, it's by me, I, qui égorgé. Why does this poem exist? Well, Izu escaped from Bucharest and he was nearly killed by the Romanian fascists in the pogrom. He escaped with his life and came to Paris. And when he came to Paris, he was shocked and he was frightened that anti-Semitism was not just German, not just Romanian, but was also French. And the city of light, the Ville Lumière, the city of human rights, democracy, liberty, égalité, fraternité, wasn't the case. It was full of anti-Semites, collaborators, French fascists. So this poem exists. Why does it exist? It exists to antagonize. It's a poem which exists to attack. Now, if I had a lot more time, don't worry, I'm going to go much longer. If I had a lot more time, or maybe several weeks, I would explain that this takes us all the way to punk rock. What? This takes, I was a soldier in the punk revolution. Yes, that's how old I am. I was in the trenches in 1977. 76, discovering the Sex Pistols. I'm from Liverpool. Because I came from Liverpool, I had the privilege to see the Anarchy Tour with, get this, the Sex Pistols, the Clash, the Heartbreakers, Subway Set. What an education. Superb. But you knew it was art and not just rock. You knew it was politics and not just fun. And the thing I took from that as a kid, right, was this: art can be a weapon. Art can attack. Poetry can be powerful because it is a weapon. I can imagine this on the streets of Paris in 1945. A gang of young Jews meet this out. And there were fights, there were arrests, there were, you know, scuffles and so on. It's poetry as a weapon. Now, I'm going to not go on much here. I'm going to come to a conclusion, because this is too much, this is too much. I said I'd talk about the theory. Now, I think this is too much here, this is too much. Let's just jump right to the end of the quotation. Isidro's idea for the poem of the future was that it should be purely formal, devoid of soul semantic content. Now, that sounds like something a professor would say. Well, I said it because I am a professor. That was my job, never work. I'm professor of cultural history at the University of London. I just gave up, that's just propaganda for my job. That's true. Anyway, it sounds very professorial and theoretical, but it's also, in practice, what we've just seen. The idea is it divides poetry into two phases. One is what he calls the oblique, the amplic. And this is where it gets more and more and more, more elaborate. And you go from Baudelaire to Mallarmé to Proudhon and the Symbolists. And then it's got to stop because it's decadent, it's bourgeois, and it's beautiful. All of which is who hated. So then he goes to ciselant, chiseling. So you go chisel, cut away, pull away, scrape down, chisel right down, right down. You know what chisel, yeah? You know what chisel means? It's to cut something right to its essence, to the bare bones. Think of the Sex Pistols and Three Chords. Music at its potent and powerful, and it's practically just pure noise. And that's what Isu is announcing to the world, the ciselant phase of poetry. And it comes from letters rather than sounds, rather than meaning. So just look at that. Backwards. This is just an example of when it comes to art, this is what poetry looks like. La parola abusata, it's a phrase he took from an Italian poet called Giuseppe Ungaretti, who was actually a fascist, actually. But it means the word being abused, you're attacking the word, trying to destroy the word. I just put it there because it's quite rare and it's quite beautiful in some way, I think. There's two things you can say about this, or several things. This is a book called Initiation à l'œuvre tape. Now, along with poetry, Isu developed a theory of what he called erotology. And erotology is basically the idea that, what is the idea? That sex is for everyone. Should not be constrained by marriage or bourgeois relationships. And it should be polysexual, bisexual, homosexual, in all different permutations. And he wrote several books, and this is, I think, a very good one, called a very interesting book, Initiation à l'Opulenté, The Introduction to High Voluptuousness, in which he combines these drawings, and there are lots of them, with his text along the side. Now, the thing is, I'm not going to explain all the text right now because it takes a lot of work to decrypt all of this. But you can see what he's trying to do as a book. He's trying to, get you so involved with the drawing and the text that you can't get out. The only thing I would say is a criticism, and I'm sure you do this as well, I don't know. Now, we're living in the post-Me Too era. In our culture. And many of these pictures, I don't really think they're sexist. I certainly don't think they're misogynistic. But I do think they're very old fashioned. They're very dated. They look like pinups to the 1950s. But then again, that was his era. Israel went mad. In 1968, when the revolution kicked off in Paris, he had a very, very severe power breakdown. He thought that he had created the revolution, but the revolution was being stolen from him, and he just, you know, completely became delusional, paranoid, hearing noises, smashing glass into his arm, eating ice creams one after the other, giving people money in the streets, and he was finally put into the mental hospital of Sainte-Anne. And this Sainte-Anne, he spent many years in Sainte-Anne, a diagnosis was made that he was bipolar. And I think this is interesting because I don't know if he was mad, but he was ill, very, very ill. And the thing about bipolar is that you think in absolutes. It's either this, or it's that, or it's that, or it's this. It's good, or it's evil. It's evil, or it's good. God loves everything as he did. Nous ye dada ye bada. Do you see where his mind works? Divides the world into two all the time. Now, there's a question here about art and madness. The precursor here is obviously someone like Antonin Artaud, who was also a great artist, but also interned in Sainte-Anne. And psychiatry, I'm very, very interested in psychiatry and art. And psychiatrists have made, you know, and still the work is still going on, about, you know, the link between art and madness, and various types of madness. Because you suffered enormously. And he wrote this very, very sad book called Les morts me déchirent, Demons Are Tearing Me Apart, which is a transcription, really, of a mind that was going too fast, but a mind that that just could not cope with reality, a mind that exploded. That's why people thought he was mad, but he wasn't. I'm going to finish here. Speaking East, The Legacy of Izun. And obviously, this week you should all go out and get a copy of this book. And maybe several of them, to your friends, but it's my opinion to some of them. Speak East, The Legacy of Izun. Does Izun have a legacy? And this is what I'm going to leave this over to you. This is the title to you. Because I don't know. We're talking about the 20th century. We live in the 21st century. Is the avant-garde dead? Are avant-garde ideas over? And this is my final point, or final observation, rather. When I left Izun with my recordings over 20 years ago, he said to me this in French, and I've never, ever, ever forgotten it. He said to me, "Vous faites partie de l'élite, monsieur. You're part of an elite, monsieur. Vous faites partie de l'élite, monsieur. Qui a compris, which is understood, que la tâche de l'avant-garde n'est pas encore achevée. That the task of the avant-garde is not yet over." Now, this is the question I'm leaving with you. Is that true? Or is the avant-garde, including electricism, an interesting part of the museum of human culture? Thank you. That's it. And I'm just going to, you know, keep my water in the distance here and say, questions, observations, reflections, imagery.
Volgens mij wordt nu het publiek gevraagd in Weimar of er nog vragen zijn over deze voorbeelden. Isidro Izu.
I mean, what I presented to you was that community.
En intussen is dit de soundcheck van Papoussi Chimetje André.
Thank you very much. Very interesting. Well, now I'm just thinking about like reading out a
again and 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 Bye.
Okay, okay. Herzlich willkommen zu den nächsten anderthalb Stunden Radio Patapui 88.3 FM. We are here, the Stibnitz members in exile. We play some extraordinary, non-commercial, and also not so popular music here from in our, or whatever, how we call it. The next song is dedicated to Test 000. I have no idea what it is. Okay, we stop it. The next song is dedicated to... Oh, yeah.
You know, folks, I was talking with my honey the other day, my Pablo honey. I said to her, I said, Pablo honey, I said, you go to my head, my radio head. Okay, computer. When you were here before, couldn't look you in the eye. You're just like an angel. Your skin makes me cry. You float like a feather in a beautiful world. I wish I was special. You're so freaking special. But I'm a creep. I'm a weirdo. What the heck am I doing here? I don't belong here. No, 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 no. Whatever makes you happy, whatever you want, you're so very special. I'll have that special. But I'm a creep. I'm a weirdo. What the heck am I doing here? I don't belong here. I'm a creep. I'm a nut job. What the hell am I doing here? I don't belong here. I don't belong here. Fitter, happier, more productive, comfortable, not drinking too much. A pig in a cage. On antibiotics! Thank you!
Welcome to the Prodigy's Pixel Dipshipology. Seat yourself comfortably in a cozy chair. Throw all the extraneous thoughts aside. Focus your attention on your TV. Press the power button and wait loading. Take a joystick from your favorite console. And the boundless world of angular colors, pixel tones and 8-bit mood. Press A plus B buttons by light touch of your fingers. Activate the new reality.
Und ich hab überhaupt keinen Bock. okay.